Blog Talk Radio.
Thought that would be kind of cute. That song was a big hit back when I was a senior in high school. It's January 26, 2011, Washington, D.C., United States of America, planet Earth, third planet from the sun. Yeah, that was one of the first rapping songs. I think it came out right after or just before. No, just before Rapper's Delight. Yep. Okay. Oh, man. Let's talk about it. Can we talk about it? Yeah, we should. Dude, the anointed one, the chosen one, our savior, America's savior, the world's savior, the savior of all mankind. I'm talking about Barack Hussein Obama. He stunk up the place last night. Wow. The only person who liked his speech last night, who enjoyed it, was Nancy Pelosi. It was horrible. Dude lied all over the place. And last night's speech, well, it gave even politicians a bad name. I believe that every politician who listened to the State of the Union address blushed because of the lying and the falsehoods and the manipulation of facts. Fact check. Boy, they just ripped my man to shreds. It was horrible. I mean, how is it that one can have you have confidence in your president or your leader, your politician, if you're not factual? I mean, I remember being when I was a young Marine officer, I was warned, I was counseled never to lie to my Marines and never to embellish or embellish the truth or and if I didn't know something and if I didn't have the facts, don't attempt to pretend that I did. In other words, don't try to con my Marines, because number one, most of the time a lot of them spent more time in the Marine Corps than some of the young lieutenants, and they can tell. I mean, they tend to know. For most young Marine officers, the enlisted people, they've spent 4, 5, 6, 8 years, 10 years, depending upon what their rank is, and they know a lot more than you do about what's going on, and they're just looking for you to make the ultimate decision on what's to be done. So I was counseled never to lie, never to embellish, and all that. So as a young second lieutenant, when you're counseled this way, it becomes gospel. What happens when you're a politician? When you are when you're the president of the United States, and you outright lie or embellish the facts. Why is it that a president, the most powerful man on earth, pretty much, at least for now, I mean, it's often stated that the president of the United States is the most powerful man on earth. But there's, China, leader of China's disputing that, and Iran and the leader of those countries are disputing that, and they're pretty close to being right. But nevertheless, when you're president of the United States, shouldn't you be truthful? Isn't there something called honor? I mean, because you've sworn to uphold and defend the Constitution against all enemies, foreign and domestic, and so on. But where is the honor? Where is the honor in truth? I mean, he gives a speech last night. Jokes fall flat. Horrible. But most of what he said either made no sense or was not factual. The numbers didn't add up. Now, he's supposed to be, quote, the smartest man in the room, end quote, which is impossible. Refer back to one of my previous shows to, I point that out, and I'll get back to that on another show about how it's impossible for any one man to be the smartest man in any room. But we'll get to that later. He's the president of the United States. He's supposed to be competent. And he's supposed to be honest. He's supposed to be truthful. Does the title politician give one a pass from actually telling the truth and being honest and factual? All right. Washington, AP, reads this way. The ledger did not appear to be adding up Tuesday night when President Barack Obama urged more spending on one hand and a spending freeze on the other. Obama spoke ambitiously of putting money into roads, research, education, efficient cars, are you kidding? High-speed rail, kidding again, you must be, and other initiatives in his State of the Union speech. He pointed to the transportation and construction projects of the last 2 years, those shovel-ready projects that apparently were actually not shovel-ready, those projects. Obama stated, we redouble these efforts. He coupled this with a call to freeze annual domestic spending for the next 5 years, but to free those spending, I'm adding this, not from the AP article, but he wants to freeze those levels at the current rate, which is astronomical and will bankrupt us. He doesn't want to cut back from these current expenditures. Okay, so but Obama offered far more examples of where he would spend than where he would cut. And some of the areas he identified for savings are not certain to yield much, if anything. For example, he said he wants to eliminate billions in taxpayer dollars we currently give to oil companies. Yet he made a similar proposal last year that went nowhere. He sought $36.5 billion in tax increases on oil and gas companies over the next decade. But Congress largely ignored the request, even though Democrats were then in charge of both houses of Congress. And look at some of Obama's statements Tuesday night and how they compare to the facts. Now, bear in mind that Barack Hussein Obama is brilliant. Oh, my God. He is so smart. He's the smartest man in the room. He's a genius. His IQ is off the charts. Somebody said back when he was running for president, some moron said, "Oh, he's brilliant. His IQ is off the charts." And then when the person who was interviewing this guy said to him, "Well, what's his IQ?" The guy said, "Well, he didn't know. But he's brilliant and his IQ is off the charts, but he don't know what his IQ is." Okay. But, you know, there's crazy stuff like that that really bugs me. But, okay, number one for the brilliant and truthful and honest and forthright and magnanimous Obama. Tackling the deficit means further reducing health care costs, including programs like Medicare and Medicaid, which are the single biggest contributor to our long-term deficit. Health insurance reform will slow these rising costs, which is part of why nonpartisan economics have said that repealing the health care law would add $250 billion to our deficit. The facts. The idea that Obama's health care law saves money for the government is based on some arguable assumptions. To be sure, the nonpartisan Congressional Budget Office has estimated the law will slightly reduce red ink over 10 years. So that's kind of like me having $15,000 credit limit on a Visa. And instead of me paying the, I guess I would estimate something like that to be around $150, $170 a month to pay per month with interest. Instead of paying that, I'll give them an extra $500 for 3 months and then go back to paying the $170 per month. So that over the course of the next 10 years, I'll wind up paying maybe 0.5% less in interest charges. Now, that sounds confusing, and I'm just confused myself. But nevertheless, that's what that means. I mean, you're really not saving anything. But the smartest man in the room has sold us on this bill of goods and just hastened the demise of this once great nation. In recent years, for example, Congress has repeatedly overridden a law that would save the Treasury billions by cutting deeply into Medicare pay for doctors. Just last month, the government once again put off the scheduled cuts for another year at a cost of $19 billion. That money is being taken out of the health care overhaul. Congress has shown itself sensitive to pressure from seniors and their doctors, and there's little reason to think that would change. So what's going to happen is absolutely nothing, and the red ink will continue to spread. Next, Obama, the anointed one, the genius, the man whose IQ is off the charts, vowed to veto any bill sent to him that includes earmarks, pet spending provisions pushed by individual lawmakers. Both parties in Congress should know this. If a bill comes to my desk with earmarks inside, I will veto it. Now, his nose should have grown like Pinocchio. Yeah, me too. Me too, LFNJ. LFNJ wrote that I confuse myself all the time trying to express the stupidity. Yeah, exactly. I couldn't agree more. So, the facts. House Speaker John Boehner, Republican from Ohio, has promised that no bill with earmarks will be sent to Obama in the first place. Republicans have taken the lead in battling earmarks while Obama signed plenty of earmark-laden spending bills when Democrats controlled both houses. As recently as last month, Obama was prepared to sign a catch-all spending measure stuffed with pork before it collapsed in the Senate after an outcry from conservatives over the bill's $8 billion plus in home state porculous spending. So Obama was prepared to sign these earmarks, these bills, but then he said before the bill came to his desk that he wouldn't. Liar, liar, pants on fire. Now, here's my question. I'm going to ask the same question. If you're a politician, are you exempt from telling the truth? I mean, it's been a foregone conclusion. It's expected that a politician will look at you and look you in the eye and then lie to you. And just lie, or at the very least, avoid telling the truth. But when you're the president of the United States of America and you're the anointed, pristine one, Barack Hussein Obama, who probably doesn't even go potty, because why should he? He's Barack Hussein Obama. He's supposed to tell the truth. You know, either he's a liar, and he's just another politician, ho-hum, or he's stupid. So you can just pick one of those. Okay, Obama. I'm willing to look at other ideas to bring costs down. Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. He should have fallen off the podium. Lightning should have struck his ass when he said that one. I'm willing to look at other ideas to bring down costs, including one that Republicans suggested last year, medical malpractice reform to rein in frivolous lawsuits. Yeah, I kind of think he ignored that one. He ignored the Republicans in general. Here are the facts. Republicans may be forgiven if this offer makes them feel like Charlie Brown running up to kick the football, only to have it pulled away again. Yeah, Obama. Obama has expressed openness before to this prominent Republican proposal, but it has not come to anything at all. It was one of several GOP ideas that were dropped or diminished in the health care law after Obama endorsed them in a televised bipartisan meeting at the height of the debate, if you remember that. Remember when they all got together in that room and they were all sitting across from each other and Obama was had on display his visible annoyance at the Republicans in the group. And then I heard that people don't like arrogant folk. That somehow that, you know, that's, I mean, I tend to be at times, but, you know, it's just in my nature. It's nothing I can't help it. But, you know, it's getting a whole, you know, military thing, the Marine thing. But, you know, so it's not in my control. But Barack Obama showed a massive amount of arrogance, stating that he'd won the election and he was the winner and they were the losers and he was the president and he can talk for as long as he wants because he's the president and all that crap. All right. Lightning should have struck him then too, but it didn't. Guess God had something else going on that day. He didn't really have time for that, deal with that particular remark. But Republicans want federal action to limit jury awards in medical malpractice cases. What Obama appears to be offering by supporting state efforts falls short of that. The president has said he agrees that fear of being sued leads to unnecessary tests and procedures that drive up health care costs. Indeed, I myself agree with this one completely. I have had surgery once or twice. And I tell you what, I went through 14, 15 different tests and procedures to verify whether or not I would be okay to have said surgery just so they could cover all their bases. It happens all the time. All the time. Exactly. Boom, there it is. That's a lot of Jack. Harry Reid. Why is he still, I mean, Harry Reid, shouldn't he like retire now? He's 730 years old. He's an old man. He should be retired right now. I mean, come on, what did they do? I mean, don't they want to like, you know, when you're that old, you should like want to go home and hang out. I guess because they don't really do anything. I guess, you know, it's like they're retired anyway. Okay. Obama, the bipartisan fiscal commission I created last year, made this crystal clear. I wish I could do his voice. I try to do it. I stand in front of the mirror and try to do Obama's voice. Did you know that a well-known scientist earlier today said that when we look in the mirror at ourselves, we're not actually seeing ourselves at that moment, but we're seeing ourselves 2/3 of a second of the person we were, 2/3 of a second after we actually look at ourselves. So we're looking back in time. Isn't that weird? Okay, but no, he said that. It was pretty cool too. So I went to the mirror and I tried to do my Obama impression, and I was looking at myself. I think it was like 1/4 or 1/1,000,000th of a second ago or something like that. But the gist is, when you look at yourself in the mirror, you're not looking at yourself as you are now. You're looking at yourself as you were the 1/1,000,000th of a second ago. So you're looking at a it's really cool. Okay. So Obama said, "I don't agree with all their proposals, the bipartisan fiscal commission proposals, but they made important progress. And their conclusion is that the only way to tackle our deficit is to cut excessive spending wherever we find it." Oh, yeah. "In domestic spending, defense spending, healthcare spending, and spending through tax breaks and loopholes." Okay, now the facts. Obama's fiscal commission did not simply recommend cutting excessive spending. It proposed that the deficit can only be tamed by cutting $3 for every $1 of new revenue raised. In other words, a painful mix of spending cuts and tax increases. Instead, Obama proposed an overhaul of the corporate tax system that would eliminate loopholes and tax breaks, but also reduce tax rates. The net effect would be, neutral. It would not reduce or raise any revenue. Obama has yet to sign on to any of the ideas, even though he promised when creating the panel that it would not be one of those, quote, Washington gimmicks, end quote. So, obviously, President Obama has no interest in actually cutting the deficit. It's got to be. I mean, does he think we're stupid? I mean, seriously now. We've been joking around, having a good time for a few minutes. But he's not really interested in cutting the deficit. He can't be. You know, I've heard that that other idiot, Van Jones, the former green job czar, say, and I quote, "How can America be broke when we have so many rich people in America, so many billionaires and millionaires in America?" Oh, poor Van from Oakland, California. Van, dude, I called your number a couple times. I left a couple of messages. I actually did this. There aren't enough rich people in America to make even the slightest dent in our deficit. There just aren't. If you took all of the money and property from every millionaire and billionaire in this country, you wouldn't even be able to satisfy the $1.5 trillion debt that's gone up just today. That's been put out in the news today. There's just not enough money. So can we please, for God's sake, dispense this notion that because we have a few rich folks that we have enough money to settle our debts? Because we don't. That because you have a few rich folks, I mean, come on. Now, Obama, to put us on solid ground, we should also find a bipartisan solution to strengthen Social Security for future generations. If you're counting on that Social Security bread a few years from now, you can just forget that. Because first of all, it's not even enough money to live on by itself. And it's probably not going to be around when you and I go out to collect it. Now, I'm 40, I'm 39. No, I'm 49 years old. Pretty soon, it's going to be time for me to go ahead and start to collect. But I'm not going to collect because I don't really need that money. But a lot of people do. And it's not going to be there because the money isn't actually physically there. There's no like lockbox or vault where Social Security money is stored and then doled out. Money comes in the form of Social Security taxes, and then the government spends it on other stuff. And then they write you a check and send it to you, but that money's coming from somewhere else too. So there's no place where this actual Social Security money is being stored, which is why George Bush, our previous president, wanted to not tax us that Social Security money, wanted us to keep that and then put that money in our own accounts for later. Stocks, bonds, whatever we wanted to put that money in. And then we could be responsible for it ourselves. So that when the time would come for us to retire, we would know where our money is and we would be responsible for protecting ourselves. But Democrats boo-hooed and talked about, you know, how we wanted to, you know, Republicans wanted to take away old folks' checks and put them out on the street and all of that. And so then George Bush backed off of that one. But I think it's still a good idea. But so the facts of the case is Obama missed another chance to embrace tough medicine proposed by the commission that he brought about for bringing down the deficit. For example, he ruled out slashing benefits or partially privatizing the Social Security program, which is what I talked about just a minute ago with Bush, and made no reference to raising the retirement age. That left listeners to guess how he plans to do anything to salvage the very popular retirement program whose trust funds are expected to run out of money in 2037 without changes. It's going to run out well before that. So what we have here is a president who is playing fast and loose with the facts. And I know the argument will be, well, doesn't every president? No president tells the truth all the time. Every president lies. Every politician lies.
Yeah.
But this is the time now for that to stop. He was supposed to be competent. He was supposed to be a different kind of president. He campaigned on being a different kind of politician, a new kind of president, a different kind. And as it stands now, he's just another liar. That's it. So now we have this massive health care law, and I suspect that Obama thought that once the health care law passed, that was the end of that. The Americans would eventually just go along with it and be one of those things like Social Security or Medicare, Medicaid, those kind of things where people boohooed about it for a little while, and then ultimately they, like the sheep that they think we are, just went along with it. But now we have lawmakers across the country seeking to invoke a 1700s doctrine in the healthcare fight. Boise, Idaho's lawmakers and nearly a dozen other states are seeking to nullify the federal law. They say that the Constitution provides for the states to ultimately decide whether or not a federal law is a federal law. It's something they're going to follow. For example, in the AP again, Boise, Idaho Republican lawmakers and nearly a dozen other states are reaching into the dusty annals of American history to fight President Obama's health care overhaul. They're introducing measures that hinge on, quote, nullification, end quote. Thomas Jefferson's late 18th century doctrine that proposed to give states the ultimate say in constitutional matters. GOP lawmakers introduced such a measure Wednesday in the Idaho House, and Alabama, Kansas, Maine, Missouri, Montana, Oregon, Nebraska, Texas, and Wyoming are also talking about the idea. So here we have a three-pronged attack. You have states seeking to nullify this federal law. Then you have states suing the federal government to nullify the law, or at least the part where we're being forced to purchase insurance. And if that part of the law is deemed unconstitutional, then the whole law falls apart. And then you have the Republican Party, held Congress, taking steps to defund Obamacare. One wonders what Obama thinks of all of this, because he seems to be playing what he thinks about this pretty close to the vest. Yep. I thought I had somebody calling in, but apparently the call.
Huh?
Hey, there you are. Hello. You have a caller. Hello.
Hello. Hello.
Yeah. Hello.
Yes. How are you?
I'm good. How are you this evening?
I'm good. I'm a first-time caller.
Wonderful. What's your
name? Listening to your show. I like it a lot.
Well, thank you.
I have a friend that's on the line who wants to say hello to you. Say hello.
Oh, hi.
Hi, how are you?
I'm fine.
Good.
But anyway, okay. But anyway, but Doctor, I really like hearing your show and some of your points. And I know this is not really your subject matter for tonight, but since you're speaking of the budget and health and the deficit and crisis and whatever, and like you, I'm an ex-military man, I'm a Marine,
Semper Fi.
Yeah, anyway, but I just want to say that, the big problem is, quote, the military-industrial complex, because that's over 60% of the budget,
yeah.
And our military budget is like more than all the military budgets combined in the world, and until we reduce that, we'll always have these big deficits, like forever, because it's just too much. I think our military budget could be cut in half, like, easily, you know, and especially if we were, you know, we're in all these foreign ventures all over the world and just, you know, protected ourselves and our immediate interests. And I think that, you know, I think that would help the budget out a lot. I do agree with a lot of things you say as far as your reasoning, as far as some of the things with healthcare and stuff like that. And it's just, this is really just a big mess. I mean, it's almost like we need another constitutional convention or something, because, you know, the Democrats are crazy and the Republicans are really crazy and all of them are bought off by everybody. So, I mean, they never, I mean, say like yourself, you're a really smart, intelligent guy. And they never appoint a guy like, say, like you to anything. You know, it's the same old, I mean, Obama said, I'm going to come in as a man of change. And he appointed all Clinton and Reagan and Clinton and Bush guys. So what kind of change was that? So anyway, that's my comment.
Well, let's go ahead and speak first to your, and, you know, most importantly to what you said about the military. You know, spending nearly 30 years as a Marine, I have come to have a lot of sentimental attachment to a lot of the military. Even you know, non-Marine bases and stuff like that. For example, my favorite military base, U.S. Naval Station Roosevelt Roads in Puerto Rico, the largest naval base in the world. It was. It closed a few years back. And I was deeply nostalgic about it, sad about it. I'll just go ahead and say it. I was sad about it. It was such a beautiful military base, and it's been around for a long time, named after, of course, President Roosevelt. But it closed because it was deemed that the Congress deemed that and the Pentagon that it was a dinosaur. It was no longer really needed, and that two or three different bases could be melded together, and the strategic command center that was located at Rosie could be sent to Orlando, Florida. And that base closed, and it saved millions and millions of dollars every year once that base was closed. And so many military bases since the time I joined the Marine Corps in 79 have closed because they were deemed to be, you know, not needed anymore, or you could put a couple of other different bases. And we're talking about historic military installations that have been around since before World War II. I mean, but I think my point is, the government, the military, the Pentagon, we police ourselves in that way. So the Congress does get involved, and we do close bases that and save money.
He proposed freezing domestic spending, saving $400 billion over the next decade.
Yes, I'm listening.
Tax rates for the wealthiest 2% of Americans, an increase of $700 billion to the Treasury.
Yeah, I'm listening.
$8 billion in Pentagon.
So when you have that kind of thing going on, you have, I mean, we do make efforts to, in the military, to lessen the burden on the taxpayer by closing bases that are deemed to be unnecessary. And you know, I tend to think that, you know, we've had aircraft. For example, we have aircraft like the A-6 Intruder that's been around since the 50s. It's still in use today. I mean, the F-4 Phantom, which has been around since before I was born, it's still in use in a lot of reserve units. I mean, we will fly aircraft and wear those things out, you know, and there's still some aircraft that have been around that are still flying that were flying since before I was born. I remember flying the A-4 Skyhawk out of Whiting Airfield in Texas, I think, in Texas, Whiting Field. And then flying that aircraft, knowing that aircraft was had been around since before I was born, like maybe 15, 20 years before I was born, and here I am flying this ancient dinosaur still. I mean, we do have a lot of excessive spending in the military, but we do get the most bang for our buck. But I do agree that if we talk about any sort of cut spending, cutting spending, that the military has to be a big part of that. Anything else you'd like to talk about?
I agree with that. I just think that I fought and you probably were in some battles too, and all men who fought, you know, and seen the destruction of war, you know, they're warriors, but they're not warriors. What I mean by that is, like, you know, they will go and they will fight if they have to, but, you know, but that's their last resort, because it's just too horrific. I mean, there's nothing like war. It's nothing like battle, especially with the modern machinery and weapons they have today. There's no, you know, great honor or valor, because, I mean, if you get hit, you just get hit, you know, and it's,
yeah.
And that's really bad. But I think that as far as listening to a couple of your programs and listening live, as my friend had me listen live tonight, that I just think that, you know, the country just, you know, almost needs a entirely, you know, just entirely new direction. I mean, I don't think, you know, the Democrats or the Republicans, you know, quote, are the answer, and that some grassroots thing is going to have to happen, and almost like not a violent revolution, but a revolution of the minds where, you know, things be done. Because I do agree with one thing you said at the beginning of the program, and you said that, you know, we're one of the, you know, quote, militarily and economically one of the most powerful countries on earth or whatever. So, you know, really we shouldn't have all these problems. It's just how things have been allocated, how the wealth has been distributed. And I don't have a problem with wealthy people or corporations making as much money as they want. You know, I just think they should just be fair to their workers and fair to their employees and all that. And I think, like, you know, General Motors and all these people get these big bailouts and then shipped all their jobs and stuff overseas. It's almost like treasonous, you know. The country gives them, you know, $1 billion, $100 billion, and then they close down Detroit. And it's ridiculous. And I think that until that that is settled and you know, and things like that, and we can just become, quote, the last comment I'll make, and then I'll hang up. You know,
okay.
Everybody always says, you know, on the 15th, it's Martin Luther King's birthday or whatever. And, you know, they get out, and Martin Luther King, Martin Luther King, Martin Luther King, Martin Luther King. Well, they should quit talking about it and accept more of his principles. I mean, because one thing I've learned, and I'm not saying that sometimes you don't have to fight, but men have been fighting for, what, 10,000 years and haven't proved anything. So there are a lot of other ways. I mean, one of the most gruesome, horrible things in this country was, say, slavery. But it was defeated not by a fight, but it was defeated and by making a war and other means. And I think that if we practiced that and did that and sought peace, you know, versus, you know, war and et cetera, things would be better, you know. And treat everybody equally, you know. And I agree with you. I'm like you in the military. It is all dear to dear to my heart, but I don't believe in fighting in battles. I don't believe one thing I hated about, you know, Bush was because, you know, his military record was very shady. And with Obama now, it's like I don't like people who send men to die in battle, you know, and get their brains, you know, their legs blown off and their arms blown off and their faces blown off and stuff. And, you know, they've never, forget battle, they've never been into the in the military. They don't even know their names. You know, they don't go to their funerals. I mean, I think that's injustice. Last thing I'm through.
Right.
Last thing that, you know, Hillary Clinton or Michelle Obama, maybe not the president because I know you have stuff to do, but, like, they don't attend the funerals. They don't do anything. And they always say, like, support the troops. Well, how do you, brother, support the troops by sending you to get your brains blown out? Unless it's really, really a great cause. If I fight for you or you fight for me, it should be because your life and your family and your property is at stake. Those are the only reason I should go fight for you, you know, and for me, you know. But for you to, you know, to make a deal to get the oil or whatever, then your businessman, go make a deal, you know.
Exactly.
I mean, go make a deal. You want the oil? You got $100 billion. Go make a deal and buy it. You know,
exactly. Yep.
Yeah. So
we
agree. But I love your program, and I tend to be a great listener. And did you want to say anything, Erica, before I hang up?
No.
Well, thank you very much for listening, and I do
quiet,
appreciate
Mike.
It.
Really
and,
quiet, but she's quiet.
I understand.
Okay.
I understand. Thank you so much for the call.
Yeah, now listen to you out there now. Thank you.
Great. Thank
Bye-bye.
You very much. All right. That was a great call, and I do appreciate it. You know, I'm going to take a detour here from what I was talking about with Obama being a lying so-and-so and talk a little bit about what my caller just spoke about. You know, when I was a 17-year-old Marine, I couldn't wait to go into battle, because as a young Marine, we're conditioned to believe that we're invincible, that there's nothing that can hurt us, even though we know the truth. We can be hurt. I mean, I was 17, you know, 18 years old, and I couldn't wait to get into battle. And it reminds me of, you know, and when I look back on it, I'm reminded of movies like A Farewell to Arms, Path to Glory with Stanley Kubrick's movie starring Kirk Douglas, and Failsafe, and even The Boys in Company C, which is a movie about Marines in Vietnam. And I'm reminded of those things now. But back then, I couldn't wait to be battle-tested. And so I got my chance pretty, you know, soon enough. And I wound up, you know, discovering, like so many young warriors do, that the experience is horrifying. And you know, I was wounded several times, and I was in the barracks in the Lebanon, Beirut, during the bombing, when the barracks was bombed, back in 83. And I was operating as a forward observer out of that that fire base, and it was it's one thing to think that, wow, you know, I'm the greatest warrior of all time, which is, you know, what I say a lot of times to people, my girlfriend, people like that. I'll say, well, I'm one of the greatest warriors of all time, and I'll say that. But, you know, when you get into a situation where people are actually shooting at you, I will admit that one of the greatest thrills is, and a lot of warriors will tell you this, is to be shot at and missed. It's exhilarating, really, it is, for just a moment. But other than that, to be shot at and hit, well, that's completely the opposite story. I'll have to tell you that. And it's not like what you see on TV. You don't just get hit by a bullet and then you just die. It just does not happen that way. It just doesn't. I can't go into detail about it, but it's just not like in the movies where bam, you hear the bullet shot, the guy clutches his chest or something and falls over, and that's the end. It just doesn't work that way. So I got a little bit off track when we were talking about war, and so and here's my point. I don't agree with what my guy George W. Bush did when he sent warriors, America's best, off to fight in Iraq. I don't agree that we should have been in Iraq or Afghanistan. I believe that being a warrior myself and being in battle and watching people die and being wounded myself numerous times, that America should only send its best to war when America itself is being threatened, such as events that occurred in World War II, certainly not World War I, because it wasn't even America's war to fight then. You know, it was between some other folks. But World War II is a perfect example of what I would consider to be a reason to go to war, and I can't think of any other war that we've ever fought in that was worth what was sacrificed for. So with that out of the way, memories. Okay, so lawmakers in was I rambling on? It sounded like I was, but it's just some interesting memories that were brought about by my last caller that I just felt compelled to share. So according to the Idaho Attorney General, they believe that nullification is going to work. But regardless of the very dubious constitutional nature of the efforts of Idaho, they're going to go ahead and try to proceed with it and see what happens. I wonder if they settle on nullification, and the other states do too, if the Supreme Court will get involved. Is the Supreme Court obliged to get involved in states' matters when a group of states decide that they want to nullify Obamacare? For example, in Texas, a nullification proposal threatens state officials who don't comply with jail time and fines. Last year in Austin, an insurance salesman led a Texas state capitol rally as protesters hosted signs urging not just nullification, but secession from the rest of the country. And I guess it's true. Texas is like a whole nother country. That used to be a commercial for tourism in Texas. In Alabama, a version of nullification sponsored last year by Republican Senator Scott Beeson passed the Senate, but died in a Democrat-led House committee. He'll resurrect it this year because Republicans control the House. So a lot of people say if the Supreme Court decides that Obama's health care law is constitutional, then we'll have to live with it. But my feeling is the people should have the final say. Frankly, the only recourse people have is for the state to try to flex some sovereignty muscle. That's what I believe. And Idaho is already one of the 27 states suing over health care reform and its provision to eventually require people to buy insurance. But the governor, Butch Otter, or CL as he likes to be called, hinted in a January 10 speech, my birthday by the way, he may go further by pursuing nullification. So here we have, okay, for philosophical guidance, many proponents look to Jefferson's words 211 years ago, in which he fought against the expansion of federal power doing an undeclared naval war against France. And, of course, we stomped all over France because, you know, they're a bunch of they're lovers, not fighters. And that was in 1799. Jefferson wrote in the Kentucky Resolutions that nullification is the rightful remedy. Jefferson created the doctrine to express his disgust with the Alien and Sedition Acts that were enacted by then President John Adams during the war with France. If you know your history, you know that John Adams and Thomas Jefferson were great friends But they also butted heads from time to time. Idaho Republican Senator Monty Pierce said that future president's words underpin nullification advocates. Chief contention states never relinquished final say over federal matters. So we have a three-pronged attack against this Obamacare. And the way I see it is that President Obama's crown jewel on the road to socialism is this health care law. And without it, all his other dominoes will fall. And he'll be just another president who attempted to create a socialist utopia here in the United States of America. But what I don't understand is that Obama's not completely stupid. Not completely. Does he not understand that just because he's president of the United States doesn't mean that he'll be able to turn this country into a socialist utopia? That for all this time, Americans have been free for the most part? So what I don't understand is his conclusion or his thought process that Americans would simply go along with obviously what his plans are. I don't know. It just all seems really bizarre to me. This guy just doesn't seem to know what the hell is going on. So, according to the AP, Obamacare won't hold down cost, and you won't be able to keep your plan. And this is another reason why folks want this whole thing nullified, because it's a big mess, and it was all a big lie. And it was all a big lie because it all came about because of a personal matter. Obama's mama, God rest her soul, was sick. I believe it was cancer. And she was in the hospital. And apparently Obama's mama, and I'm not trying to be funny either when I say that, Obama's mother did not get care that she thought she deserved or that he thought she deserved. So Obama decided that if he were ever in the situation where he could change the matter, that he would, so that we would all have free health care and get as much care as we want or desire, because he wasn't going to see his mama suffer or other people suffer like his mama suffered, which is noble and sweet. But, dude, we're all going to suffer under this massive boondoggle. Hell is paved with the something of good intentions. Well, tomorrow we'll get into this whole thing about how we will or won't be able to keep our health insurance and how, once again, we are played for fools and what a big old mess this whole thing is. Thank you so much for listening, and thank you very much. I got that from the lady who, Kara Sedgwick's character in The Closer, my southern girl from Georgia. Anyway, but hey, thank you so much for listening, and we will be back tomorrow, and have a good night. Thank you so much. All right, we'll talk to you tomorrow.